I'm Mark Gagan, and you're listening to the Voice of Insurance podcast, produced in association with Advantage Go. Pick and choose your own best-of-breed insurtech and data providers with Advantage Go's ecosystem. How do you get big, globally diversified insurance companies to innovate? It's something that we all know is way easier said than done. Well, that's what today's podcast is really all about. Today, I'm joined by two senior executives who are working together to implement change, improve efficiency, and do new things at global insurer QBE. Global Head of Cyber, Serene Davis, has been tasked with creating a global offering for cyber at QBE, where up to now, cyber development has been patchy, with different strategies playing out in various markets across the world. And CEO of QBE Ventures, James Orchard, runs a small team whose job it is to assist senior executives like Serene in realizing their vision through the partnerships and strategic investments that will build up the tech providers that will help them achieve their goals. It's a fascinating conversation, and one that embodies QBE's relatively new CEO Andrew Horton's plan to imbue a culture of innovation across the group globally. Indeed, Mr. Horton may not be on the show himself in this episode, but his presence never seems to be far from the surface. It's clear from this lively chat, you have to lead from the top, and you have to resource it and be strong enough to accept that there will be many twists and turns on the road to eventual success. Listen for yourself. For anyone who is grappling with the challenge of keeping a large insurance business up to speed and relevant, without throwing out the parts of its culture that have already got it to where it is, this will be a valuable listen. What's more, Serene and James are great company and very easy to follow, so I can highly recommend a listen. Enjoy the podcast. Serene and James, welcome to the Voice of Insurance.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I'm going to get both of you to introduce yourselves, but we'll start with you, Serene. Give us a brief introduction and a history of your career to date and how you came to be in your current role.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. Let's see. Well, like a lot of us in insurance, I don't know that I said at 5 years old that this is where I wanted to be when I grew up, though I have gotten my 10-year-old to start admitting that maybe insurance, if he can't be a professional soccer player, maybe he'd consider insurance. So we'll see. I sort of fell into insurance out of college. I had a lot of fun in college. And when it came time to get a job, I sort of needed something that would appreciate the social aspects of the professional world. So I fell into insurance a bit. I really kicked off cyber and tech early. I started at AIG in San Francisco around 2005. And that was really what got me started into cyber and tech, though at that time it was really, really just tech, you know, and I was an underwriter on the middle market team there. I was there for a hot second, a cup of coffee, not very long, and along comes a syndicate from Lloyd's coming on shore in the US to try something different, and that was Beazley, where I made the jump and I moved over to Beazley in around 2006, where I also was in cyber and tech, and I was there up until very recently. Coming over to QBE was a really exciting move. I'd been at Beazley for 17 years, grew up there. It was a really fun place to be as cyber went from something no one really talked about to what it is today. And being at Beazley for that journey was pretty wild and very fun. And we had a great time doing it, ups and downs. I learned a lot. QBE came about a bit because Andrew Horton, who was the CEO at Beazley, now at QBE, decided that cyber was something that QBE should pursue a bit more.
I suppose that's quite logical, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So I was lucky enough to have grown up at Beazley under Andrew and felt pretty confident that QBE could do this. And so I made the jump over to Global Head of QBE, where I am now. And I guess I'm approaching a year here at this.
Well, excellent. Well, we're going to be unpicking all of that with you later. But so, yeah, a vast majority of your career at Beazley. James, your turn to introduce yourself. Give us a brief history of your career.
No, thank you. So my career actually started in private equity in London around the same time as Serena, so about 2005. And then I took a number of roles in corporate finance and strategy back in Australia. So I was working for a large Australian conglomerate at the time called Wesfarmers. And I was tasked with moving into their insurance division. And it was something I had no ambition to do. It was something that I had no intention to stay there for a long time, but really started to enjoy it and felt I was adding a bit of value. So yeah, like many, really fell in love with it. And that business unit was sold to Insurance Australia Group or IAG, which is a large, more consumer-focused personalized carrier in Australia. And was there for a couple of years leading their strategy teams before I was given an opportunity to form part of a new division. Or help shape that, which was really focused on digital transformation for the group. And within that, I had the joy of leading innovation. And I was completely new to innovation. It was my first taste of it. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing, but I was really lucky to, I guess, surround myself with those who did know what they were doing. And we had a ton of fun. We ended up building FireMark Labs, which later became FireMark Ventures. And I loved every minute of it.
So was that during the sort of InsurTech boom time?
Yeah, that's right. It's that work started around 2016.
Yeah. So you were right at the beginning.
Exactly. And then during COVID, I had the opportunity to come in and lead QBE Ventures, who had been going for a couple of years and established a strong foundation, a number of good investments. And really, it was about taking QBE Ventures to the next level. And I think the chance to work for an insurance company that had a slightly larger global footprint was in some of the key markets, P&C markets globally, and particularly in commercial and specialty lines where I felt there hadn't been too much innovation yet and it was about to explode. The chance of doing all that was too good to refuse. So I took that on. That was about 3 years ago. So far, so good. Back in the UK now, helping scale our efforts here.
No, you're certainly right with that. The QBE Ventures, I remember being a conference organizer, obviously in my previous life, doing lots of InsurTech conferences, and QBE Ventures were right at the heart of that, particularly on the US side of things. So it was good to see a familiar name doing something quite unfamiliar, actually. So why don't you give us a quick runaround of what QBE Ventures is all about, James?
Yeah, of course. So QBE Ventures is the corporate venture arm of QBE. So what does that mean? Well, that means that we invest in and build alongside venture stage technology companies or startups, basically.
I suppose it's important to say that you're not a venture capitalist. You're not just sort of somebody at QBE board level has given you X amount of money and said, go and turn that into five times the amount of money in a few years or whatever. It's more strategic than that, isn't it?
That's right. So there are basically two forms of corporate venture fund, as you said. And so there is, you know, those that invest purely for financial return, and they're very much tasked with that, often quite separate from the business, and those that are tasked with a strategic return where they help or they invest to help the organization deliver on its longer term objectives. So we're very much in the latter. So our role within QBE, and we worked really hard to define that and have a clear role in the strategy of the group, which I think is of fundamental importance for those who are innovating. Our role within QBE is to accelerate the delivery of the group's strategic priorities by bringing the outside in. Okay. So for us, we spend a lot of time doing that. And we really try and aim or maximize that strategic value through two ways. One is the operational benefit. So how can we partner with startups to help the organization grow, to help improve margin, to help achieve some of its financial KPIs? And then there's a thought leadership aspect to it. So how can we help provide access to insights on new trends or emerging technologies? How can we help the organization understand sort of new strategic spaces? How can we sort of help shape strategy for the organization in a way that provides longer term opportunities? And so we're very much focused on that. And when I came in, I was really, really conscious to set or reset QBE Ventures in a way that would enable us to maximize that strategic value. So to do so, we don't limit ourselves purely to investments. We have a number of other capabilities within the team too. And we have about 10 people in the team, and the vast bulk of them are centered actually on partnerships and build. And so if I bring that to life a little bit in terms of how we work, we try to not go looking for technology and then a problem for the technology to solve. So we're very much centered around working closely with the business, focusing very much on the problems or the opportunities that they see, helping them understand that, listening to that, shaping their strategy, and then really help validate that the problem exists or that the opportunity exists. And once we've done that, we can then start to look outside the organization and say, well, hang on, from an emerging technology perspective, who out there is doing something that can help us accelerate either us solving that problem or capitalizing on that opportunity? So we look far and wide for that. Once we've narrowed that down to a number of partners or a partner that we think we can work with, we've then tried to set up a number of mechanisms that will allow us to maximize that strategic value. So for example, if we find that there's a startup out there, they've got a fantastic product, it's very mature, and we can simply just consume that software, then we will simply just help the business with a partnership agreement. We may help onboard it, but it's effectively our role finished, just a partnership. If we feel that there's an opportunity where actually, yes, this technology can solve a problem now, but we think it can also solve three or four other problems, i.e. we can point it to a new product line, or we can take it to a new market, or we can fine tune the AI to do something else, then a lot of time we will look to take an investment, because we feel that we can achieve much more strategic value with that investment, with that skin in the game, than if we just simply partner with them. So in that stage, we make an investment. But then we also find on occasion times when the startup or a number of startups don't quite have what we want, but if we bring everything together, then we can co-create or build something that's quite unique. And we've done that once or twice, but it's quite exciting that we have the ability to create commercial structures, create joint ventures and partnerships that allow us to have a combination of build, invest, and partner all together. And so we very much centered on establishing a capability that allows us to do all of that. From the investment side, look, we do have a fund. So we have $100 million. We typically invest around $3 to $5 million per company. And so we do have that as a mechanism. But regardless of whether we use it or not, our focus is on really wanting to establish a deeper strategic partnership.
To create products of the future, all sorts of things. So it could be almost anything.
That's right.
I'll have to try and pin you down then. You've now described one of the most eclectic sort of rainbow businesses in many ways. Is there a typical investment? What's your most typical? What's your more bread and butter kind of investment? And also, when you do that, what's the ideal outcome? Obviously, investment or not investment, or just a partnership, for example. And what's your sort of ideal outcome? Obviously, presumably, it'd be nice to keep your 100 million topped up and you'd like to make a small profit on it, but that's not the key strategic outcome. What does good look like when you see it?
If I have a look at it from an investment perspective, I think if I sort of zoom out, what I enjoy most is when we can find a company that's relatively early stage, so say Series A. So they've just got some product market fit and they're now starting to think about how they ramp up their business. You know, when you find a company at that stage where there's a strong strategic element to the relationship and you can just see so much potential in the founders, in what they've built, and there's a really strong sort of cultural, I guess, link and a desire to work together. That's sort of really what I love and like to find. And so we'll make an investment. We'll have a look at a number of opportunities. We'll play the role of active partner. So, you know, we'll take a seat on the board or we'll observe the board. And all of us will work very closely with that founding team to help scale their technology, improve their technology, grow with other insurance companies or other finance companies, and help their business become successful. So for me, it's not just us achieving strategic value, but it's also being able to give it back to the startups and in a mutually beneficial way, help them grow.
So you're quite active.
We are. We do like to be active. We're not always, you know, certainly for some of the latter stage companies we might invest in, we won't always be as active, for example, on the board. But where we do invest from a later stage perspective, we do so mostly with companies that have yet to work with the insurance sector. And so even though we can't influence, say, through the boardroom, we would influence through being a lighthouse customer from an insurance perspective. So we'll bring them into the insurance vertical. We'll help them understand the industry, help them understand everything from sort of the regulatory construct to how to sell to an insurance company, obviously the sales cycles and everything like that. So we do that. But typically what we like, as I said, is that Series A where we can play that more active role. And I think our value proposition within QB Ventures is we're big enough to have a large global reach, a network almost into every major P&C market. We're also in the reinsurance space as well. So we've got a very broad offering. We can do that, but through a single team, through a single front door, which is Ventures. And so there's no hierarchy and we can quite quickly, you know, whether it's Singapore direct to consumer or whether it's accident health or cyber, whatever that might be, we can be that single front door for them into QBE.
Yeah. And just for anyone who's listening, who's not familiar with all venture capital terminology, Series A, that's still a very early stage company, but it's not like an angel company. It's not just a couple of really clever people with an idea. This is a company that's now got revenue and it's got product that people want to buy because that's how they're getting revenue. So they've got to the point where there's definitely a product that people want to buy. And this is the first sort of serious fundraising, isn't it? At that point, you'd describe it. And then it goes on the alphabet, isn't it? The next one would be Series B, one C.
Exactly right. In Series A, we tend to see one or two customers, depending on what they're selling, obviously, but one or two customers, that early bit of traction. And now it's really about sort of refining that and then growing. It's beyond a PowerPoint. It's not quite there yet, but it's certainly a long way there.
Yeah, they're unlikely to be profitable, should we say, at that stage where they need to take a lot of investment and really scale up.
Exactly.
Well, I think, Serene, we've been hogging James's attention for too long. Give us a view of what's going on in cyber and what's the state of cyber in QBE right now as it is, and then what's your vision for building it?
I would say I've sort of been joking with people in this role that the global part of my title, I underestimated just how big that global piece really was.
Well, I think QBE is very, very global.
Yes, that's right. I wasn't as familiar with QBE from a North America standpoint in the US cyber market. And so having come over and really spent all of my time exploring QBE and what we have on the ground and what we need to do, I've been pleasantly surprised by the massive footprint of QBE, but also the footprint that already exists for cyber underwriters. So arguably, though it hasn't been a product that QBE has sought out to grow in a big way, especially globally, we have a real competitive level of underwriters on the ground in many countries, especially continental Europe, London, the US. And we have a real appetite to grow both in those places, but then also in places where we're not currently writing cyber. So sort of the way that I describe it now is the first thing that I'm doing is this sort of foundational lift. And so I need to get everybody around the world that's currently doing cyber and where we want to do cyber to the same foundational place. And we have to do that because we need to be able to just compete on the day-to-day with those markets that are also in that space, right? And there's just a few things that really need some tweaking. The vision for this is that we will offer it's pretty simple, but for QBE, it's a bit new in concept, that around the world, wherever you approach us, you will have the same experience, from product to the way we assess risk, to the way that we talk about risk, to our enthusiasm for cyber risk, right? So that's sort of my job. And built into that are sort of a million different things. In North America and Europe and London, it's bringing that around to creating that cohesive approach, starting cyber very much in Australia. So that's a bit of a ground up build that we're doing right now. Asia as well, not quite ground up, but we still have a lot of work that we can do more there. New Zealand. So that foundational piece takes up a lot of my time now. And then secondarily, and sort of at the same time in parallel, is the innovation piece. So how are we going to do it a bit differently? How are we going to capitalize on some of the things that are available now and capitalize on the enthusiasm for cyber that QBE has from the GEC, the top leadership, down into the divisions? How do we make sure that there's a lot of momentum there? And I want to make sure that I get to take advantage of that. Cyber is really important for QBE, both as a great product, right? When you can do cyber, you can do it well, you can do it profitably. The market has learned a lot over the years, but it's also a product that you can really do globally. And that is something that QBE has been missing a trick on. For us to flex our global muscle for the first time really in cyber, I think will be quite meaningful. And that speaks to bringing the organization more together across divisions. So doing cyber globally is important to QBE because it kind of ticks a lot of the priorities that we have right now that are beyond just a profitable product that we can grow.
You're right. You couldn't get anything more global than cyber because it's, you know, by absolute definition, without borders, and the losses are coming from all over the place. And well, half the time, we can't even prove where they're coming from. They're just coming from the ether. So it sounds like you've got a really big management job there, but some places you don't have any cyber. Other places you've got some cyber, but at a certain level. At other places, you're at a very sophisticated level of understanding. And so you've got varying tasks to do. And I suppose this is the point where anyone listening to the podcast will say, I was wondering why James and Serene are here together. Because, of course, what you're doing, you're going to be putting your stamp on something new. And the first time that QBE is trying to do something on a global basis in a very innovative sector like cyber. And, of course, you've got James to help build it with you. And you've got backing all the way from the top. Obviously, we know Mr. Horton was on the show. And we also know, of course, that he must be a fan of cyber because of his previous roles and yours. So I presume you and James are on the phone all the time, scoping up different companies that are going to help you. And obviously, it seems that the trend in cyber has been, whereas it first started, perhaps more of as an ecosystem type approach. These days, it seems to be more like a full service type operation. Is that the type of service you want to evolve? And presume you need, in order to do that, you really need James to go out and help get some of those service providers to be bound into what you're doing.
Yeah, I think first, James and his team were like finding just how global QBE really was when I started, to find that there's this ventures team here sort of waiting to help me build out this vision was a huge bonus to the job. I mean, I can't really imagine trying to do what we want to do without a team like James's, who I do now work very closely with. I always tell James, him and his team were some of my first friends at QBE.
Yes, but imagine, you know, James and his team are going to all these different accelerators and insurtech conferences and meeting all sorts of interesting people and kind of sifting through all the really, really, really good ones and the ones who are sort of just generally got some good ideas and doing all that filtering for you and then presenting you with a lot of interesting potential solutions, I presume. Is that how it works or is it a two-way street?
I mean, I think it's a two-way street. Undoubtedly, I'm sort of that like cyber insurance subject matter expert. Insurance is what I do. Love insurance, right? And so James's team sometimes challenges me on my thought process, right? I also grew up in one place that formed my thinking on what we do and how we do it. And so now moving into a new role in a new company and a whole runway ahead of us, James's team challenges me sometimes. Am I thinking about this kind of from an old perspective that maybe I need to, you know, but I think I challenge his team too, because there are some realities. If we could just do anything in cyber insurance, I think we would see companies trying entirely different ways of doing business. But we do have some of the older insurance dynamics that we have to work with, such as distribution.
And you can't get away from regulation.
And regulation, exactly. And sort of some of that, who is cyber insurance to the buyer? We navigate that. Where do they want us to play in their world, et cetera? So I think that it's a two-way street with Venture's team and myself in terms of challenging each other. His team brings a lot of great ideas. Some we move forward, some we don't.
So he's coming and saying, hey, what do you think of these? I'm not sure. Or do you think you could use this? This sounds like a fun idea. I haven't heard of this before.
Yeah, absolutely.
And at the same time, I presume he's also probably asking you, well, Serene, look, what is it you really, really want? If I found this thing, what would make you happy? Do you then say, look, James, if you can find somebody who can do this thing via AI, then we'll be absolutely amazed and we'll be on a plane. We want to meet these people.
Yeah. I mean, we've done a lot of work to map out where we want to go, right? And that's a team effort between James's team and myself, and I'm building out my team. And so soon there'll be more brains in the room to think about these things and challenge each other's thought process and what the market needs and what we need to do. It's a lot of fun for me to see what's in that ecosystem of startup, new technology. When I started cyber years ago, and even in my old shop, like when cyber really started kicking off, say like 2009, 2010, the number of options, even around vendors that could handle an incident with you, were very, very small. You had a couple law firms that you would have trusted, right, across the whole US, couple vendor forensic firms that you would trust, and that was kind of it. And so now, if you fast forward to today, it's almost overwhelming. All of the vendors and the company, everybody who wants to be in this general sort of cyber space. So James's team really helps with making sure that who gets in front of me and in front of sort of the general cyber team is a worthwhile thing to explore.
I'll just build on that. I think from our perspective, it's terribly exciting because obviously Serene, who's new to the organization, has a mandate to grow a global capability. She'll be the first person within QB to do that from a go-to-market perspective. So to be able to do that, have almost a clean slate, if you like, or a strong foundation to build upon is hugely exciting. To have that mandate then, I guess, from the top down, which then comes with risk appetite, it comes with potential funding to have a look at various opportunities. To be able to do that and do that in a market where I think it's really defined how you have a look at integrating sort of risk management, various other emerging technologies into the value proposition to enhance, you know, our understanding of risk, to enhance the value that cyber insurance offers. It all sort of adds up to this perfect combination where, you know, we can come together, we can feel like we're adding value, we're helping craft that vision, we're opening Serene and her team's eyes to some of the stuff that's out there. But likewise, a lot of what we see is PowerPoints and pretty demos. So how do we cut through some of that to actually say, well, actually, that's not real, or you can't do that, or that's just not going to scale. And so to be able to have that lens from her team is fantastic. So I think so far, we've started working really well. And I think as we start to press the pedal a little bit, it's going to get even more exciting.
Yeah, and Serene, I suppose I should rewind a bit. I'd probably put words in your mouth to say that from observing from the outside that we seem to be going towards much more of a full service type of product with cyber, where it's almost a live service. People have described it as the fourth emergency service, but better than the fourth emergency service because it already tells you your building's about to be on fire or that someone's throwing a firebomb at it and tells them to go away. It's constantly updating your protections and looking at all your vulnerabilities and is effectively working in real time. Is that the kind of thing you want to build at QBE? I just assume that that's what you wanted to build, but let's see what's on top of your shopping list in terms of what that vision is. What would this QBE global cyber service of the future look like?
Yeah, I mean, you're not far off. So in its most basic form, right, you want to do things that improve your risk selection, not just at the time of binding, but throughout a policy period. And you want to do things that improve your client's posture for as long as they are on your books. So it's a pretty simplistic idea when you think about it just from that high level approach. I think part of the fun at QBE is that we do right now have a capability sort of maneuver where in the world we are. So maybe there's some things that we're going to pilot in one part of the world where we have something, maybe it's because we're standing up cyber for the first time. So maybe we have a little bit of flexibility and like, what can we try here? And if we try it and it doesn't work, well, we didn't break anything because we were building to begin with, right? And then you have sort of the places that are, you kind of have to be a little more protective of, like London, Europe, and North America, where we have books of business. And we have to consider what's already in place and sort of what that looks like. So I think high level, right, it's assessing better risk and it's improving our client's position while they remain insured. And of course, baked into that is all the other sort of, it creates stickiness with clients. But there's also the need to make sure that there's a lot of thoughtfulness that goes into this. The markets that are really building out these in-house services, you know, not all markets are. So there, yes, you have these, especially insurtechs, when they came on the scene, especially 2019, 2020, they were real disruptors. And they kind of pushed technology into the cyber market from an underwriting and risk assessment and risk services standpoint that hadn't really been seen. So that was a good thing. And some of your more traditional markets are going in that direction. But surprisingly, you still have some pretty big cyber players who aren't investing a lot in this space as far as you can see today. So I think that the market is actually still a bit split on it.
Is that just a natural bifurcation that you get in any particularly specialty market, global market, and then syndicated market where some are investing more in those lead capabilities and others are happy to follow?
Well, that's right. And it's also, where do you want to play, right? So not all companies are created equally. And so as you push down into smaller companies, we believe as a market, right, that they're going to allow us to be a bit more hands-on and helpful. If you are only really looking to play in that larger space, well, they likely aren't looking for you to do some of those same things, right? And so I think there's just this need to understand, even as we build out for QBE and our strategy, where are we going to play and in what parts of the world are we going to play there? And that will also form some of what we build out with James's team and otherwise.
No, that's really, really interesting. Because it's absolutely horses for courses. I mean, some multinationals, of course, anyone who's got a CISO, you know, Chief Information Security Officer on their board, or they've already got their own cyber specialist teams. And of course, some, we're going right down to companies that don't even have their own IT department.
Right.
You can be their cyber IT department as far as they're concerned, and they'll be really, really grateful. And others might say, no, well, actually, I don't want you messing around on my network. I really like it, or I like the way I've got it configured.
Oh, absolutely. And we have seen, especially in the US, some of the, in the larger middle market and larger space, the hard market really pushed companies to get better controls in place and to start thinking about that. So sometimes the need is just different. And you're seeing a lot of the markets. We have to be able to navigate these different approaches to different segments and even different places in the world where the market is more mature in one place than somewhere else. And even that changes where clients want to see their insurance company show up for them.
I just want to go into how you work day to day, Serene and James. I mean, Serene, in terms of your vision, are you more of an idealist or are you more of a pragmatist? Do you have a big idea of what you want to do and then say, James, go and get me that. I had a dream about a unicorn, can you go and find me one? Or, which, I mean, that's a very unrealistic version of an idealist. Or you're more a pragmatist, say, you know what, here are some tools that I know exist. Here's hammers and nails and things that I know are out there and exist. Shall we just put them all together and work with what we know we can do? Or is there a bit of a blend of both?
Well, I think for me, and then I'll let James answer, because I'm sure, I don't know if our answers are exactly the same. Absolutely both, right? So for me, even this conversation today, right, it's that foundational piece that I'm referring to where we need to do things as basic, but also really important and hard to accomplish, which is, you know, a global policy form, a global risk assessment framework, et cetera, et cetera. Those to me are the hammer and the nail, the things that everyone's been relying upon forever in insurance to have a successful practice. And that I call, like, that's today's work. And then some of what we're talking about today is the innovation piece is the aspirational, is that next level. So I would say absolutely both, because this is at the end of the day insurance, and there are some real foundational pieces, and that's the more down to earth, I guess, as you phrase it, approach. And then there's definitely, I've said to James's team, I have these really great ideas. Here's what I think you should go find. And then they do. So
yeah, James. I agree. I definitely think it's a combination of both. And I think we have the vision, you have an aspiration, it's something that you're working to, but how you get there is going to be a combination of sort of small incremental steps, I think, balanced with some larger, bigger bets that are sort of more longer term in focus. So Serene said, we're relatively early on our journey. And I think that in the context of QBE, even if we just look outside and have a look at some of those emerging MGAs, look at some of the more progressive carriers, even if we catch up to them and use some of the technology that they're using, that's still going to be sort of leaps ahead of what we can do in some markets today. But I think what's really important too, just sort of building on what Serene said, is the thing is we continue to shape and move towards that longer term vision, is that we don't move away from focusing on the customer. Like, we need a relentless focus on the needs of the customer, how those needs change, and from my perspective, how we can use emerging technologies to address those changes. So one of the things that we're working on is not just the tech, but making sure that we have the ways of working and the process that allow us to, I guess, strike that balance, and that we don't err on the side of caution, you know, too often, or on the incremental too often, that we do get that balance. And I think that if we can take that nimble approach, if we can then bring that into sort of QBE's strength and global footprint and reach, then I think we actually have something, you know, to Serene's point, that it is going to differentiate over time. And I think it is going to give us a point of difference in the market that hopefully we can sort of work together on.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Horton wouldn't let you get away without having targets and goals and ways of defining success. Can you share some of these potential goals that you have, maybe at 5 or 10 years?
I would say for me, I haven't had to throw out huge numbers yet. I mean, we're, you know, this is a big, big job at QBE to bring something together globally, given the way in which QBE is structured, which is very much three divisions. So I think the way that I have been sort of describing success in this role, at least initially, 2025 is the year that I see all the things that are in flight currently to just get us to this really strong foundational place. 2025 is where we will hit that year really running, right? Because a lot of those things will have landed and moved into production and creating more opportunity to sell fiber, which is the end goal here. So for me, it's a lot around who are we in the market? That's kind of how I grew up in my profession, of always thinking about how relevant you are. So being that relevant market, that predictable, consistent market around the world, where we can say confidently that we are meeting our clients and, really importantly, our brokers where they are at, regardless of where in the world we are, and that same broker firm can approach us in Spain, can approach us in Los Angeles, can approach us in Sydney, and they're going to start to really feel like they know who QBE is, and they know what we stand for, and they know what we want and how we operate. That's what I'm get really excited about currently. And then sort of the growth as it pertains to numbers and that, I mean, I think that will naturally come. If we can do what I just described, the growth is going to follow.
If you're one of the first names that a broker thinks of when they think of cyber, and they think, oh yeah, QBE do cyber now, yeah, yeah. And they do it this way, and I know what sort of things to send them and in what format. That's half the battle, plus cyber's growing anyway. And we think we can all agree that cyber's going to continue to grow for at least the next 15 to 20 years.
I think something from our side as well, just so from the venture side, is there are a lot of companies, cutting edge companies out there doing all sorts of wonderful things in cybersecurity. And we want to have a strong enough value proposition, a strong enough reputation in market, not only in the insurance industry with brokers and our customers, but also in those sort of cybersecurity communities as well, right? Where we can be a partner of choice, where we can have a really slick onboarding partnership process, where those who work with us know that they're going to receive guidance and help in how their business scales and grows, but also that they're coming into a mutually beneficial relationship that's going to be great for everybody. So I think if in 5 years we can have that reputation as well and be able to sort of have this ecosystem of partners, and I think that'll be, you know, a good sign of the traction success we've had.
And James, on that, how keen are you on trying to find exclusive things that would be kind of QBE-only things? And how realistic are you about other things where you know that you've found a partner that probably needs to work for your competitors as well?
Yeah, this is a really good question. And it's interesting because venture, corporate venture in particular, is, I think, shifted over time, where there used to be a heavy focus, particularly on very competitive industries, where you would look for that exclusivity, right? And you would look to limit that. We take completely the opposite view. Well, certainly I do. I have a desire to want to help QBE and the startup. And I think you're going to be limiting it, the potential of that startup, the development of its technology, if you're locking them into a single partner. So we're very founder friendly in that sense. We want to encourage them and go out there. And I think it really comes down to how we use the technology. And, you know, there's certainly things that we can do as an early investor or as an early partner where we can be the guinea pig, if you like, or we can see things, you know, slightly ahead of everyone else, but in no way being exclusive. And then it just comes down to our processes and our ways of working that will hopefully position us better than everyone else to be able to sort of work with them, stay ahead of the technology as it advances and use it to better value than anyone else can. And I think if we keep going with that, then it'll be beneficial for everybody.
There's probably nothing worse than finding someone who's got this brilliant idea and then you almost want to smother them and you end up that they can't actually grow to the full potential because you're limiting what they're doing. And then that means that they can't then execute for you either.
Exactly. And you'll slow down the process, you know, and the learnings that they would have got from other partners that you could potentially benefit in the next iterations of their product or further down their roadmap. So yes, there's definitely been more benefits, I think, to letting them run free and grow as big as they can.
We've been talking a lot of all strategic, technical, very insurancey, big picture kind of stuff. This is a people business, ultimately, Serene. So how much of your focus is about getting those people or getting the best out of all the people that you've already got?
What makes QBE so unique is we have this opportunity to do something new and innovative and not entirely startup-y, but definitely with a lot of runway. But it's wrapped within a bigger brand, a really safe, big insurance company. The fact that QBE hasn't pushed deeply into cyber in the past is, you know, because I love cyber, it feels like it could have been a miss, and it's definitely time. And so that culture piece for me is there is absolutely top-down support for cyber, but I still get to do what I really love to do, which is bring people along on the cyber journey and do the therapy and the, you know, we can do this and it's really fun and let's get out there and this is what it looks like. So that's the culture piece for me that has been easy because of the top-down support, but does still exist in sort of the day-to-day. And then secondly, I mean, just culturally, cyber is one cool thing happening at QBE, but there's a lot of cool things happening at QBE. And the push for innovation and what Andrew and his executive leaders are doing in terms of just moving QBE in a direction of embracing new technology and new ways of doing things, it really helps my job. But it is not just cyber. It is the whole organization is being asked to think about this differently. And cyber has benefited. We've already, with the help of James' team, built an AI tool that the cyber underwriters were the first to get to use. And that's really exciting. So cyber being an important part of all of this, we kind of got to go first, which is great. But there's this whole big world of QBE where the culture is shifting towards use technology. And I think James, he's better positioned to speak on that larger picture.
The only thing I'd add is that, you know, the stars are certainly aligning in the sense of the broader push towards innovation, the focus around how we can balance a lot of the core work that's underway, modernizing our technology, growing in key markets, and really sort of pursuing Andrew's strategy. Being able to balance that with a growing focus on the longer term, with a growing focus on innovation and doing new things is really exciting. And it's really helpful to guide and give us the room to be able to sort of set that more aspirational vision for cyber, being able to sort of know that we've got the funding in place, know that we've got the support to be able to bring that in to try new things. But also our staff on a day-to-day basis are being encouraged to adopt a much more growth-oriented, open mindset. So if they can do that at the same time as apply it to their day-to-day jobs, is what we're seeing in cyber, then we really do have such a strong foundation in place culturally to be able to sort of deliver on that vision. And if I'm honest, I think if we don't have that growth mindset, if we don't try and encourage that open mindset and give our people the room and the tools to innovate, then we'll fail in this aspiration. We'll have a follow me type approach to the market. So I think there's definitely method behind the madness. I think, as I said, the stars are aligning to come together to certainly give us a bit of inertia to, act as a bit of a catalyst to get us going.
And James, in ventures, I mean, you're meeting hundreds of new people all the time, every year. You're out meeting founders of small insurtech companies. I mean, so how much of your job is really people management or understanding, sort of judging those characters and how good they might work with an insurance company?
Yeah, it's a really key part. And as I said, one of the sort of, if I boil down to the sort of the top two or three things I look for in a startup, number one is culture, right? What is the leadership style, the engagement style of the founder? You know, how collaborative are they? Do they come in and ask questions and want to know of your problem? Or do they come in thinking that they've already solved everyone's problems and therefore bring us, you know, a certain character or style with them, which is probably not conducive to, you know, a longer term partnership. So culture is hugely important. We place a lot of value on it. We really want to make sure that it's not only the startup that has those cultural elements, if you like, but also that the various parts of QB they're working in are also startup ready. And a key part of being startup ready and being able to work with startups, it's not just around having risk appetite and, you know, having a desire to be innovative or have a little bit of money squirreled away so that you can innovate, but it's about understanding that there's a lot of unknowns. You're going to get things wrong a lot. And so you need to have patience. You need to have resilience. You need to be clear in your expectations that it's not going to work 100% from day one, right? And it takes time. And so we then focused internally on the culture side too. Are we ready to work with startups? Are we in the right position? And so if you can marry them both up, then you have the ingredients of something great. If not, and we've certainly taken learnings from that, then it tends to fail pretty quick.
It sounds like you've both got really, really interesting jobs. So Serene, back to you. Is there any upper limit to the cyber ambition? I mean, do you want to be number one or what would it be?
No upper limit at this point. I think rather than thinking much at all about at which point do we slow things down, I'm very much focused currently on how to kind of speed things up. How do we get really moving to a point? If we're ever at a point where we're talking about the upper limit of our cyber ambitions, I think that I've had some success.
While I've got you on, actually, it'd be interesting to have your view about this. When we're talking about upper limits of what's insurable in cyber, we're coming up against the question of how systemic do you believe systemic risks to be? Is there a big debate there at the moment, or is it more of a consensus at the moment? It seems that there's a bit of a consensus, and we've been able to get ILS investors, which is great, on from cat bonds, more capital markets style investors to also agree with us as an industry on what our view of risk is and what our view of the worst case scenario is. What's your view? Do you think there's a divergence there? Or do you think if this big event ever happens, will there be a big divergence? Will there be, perhaps use Buffett's terminology, some will be found to be swimming naked and some of them will be happily in their bathing costumes?
We're having this conversation, you know, in 2024. I think this question was harder to answer in 2023. I think we are starting to see some acceptance of some similar ideas on what this should look like and how we go about it. I think give credit to some of the bigger cyber markets who have had to go first on some of this and really lead and lead with risk associated with their books of business. And so I look at some of those leading markets who are really trying to tackle this first, and I have an appreciation for that position. I like to think that if the big event ever happened, I would never wish for any market to get caught with a big event and have it crumble half the market and half the market stand. That would just be a really bad day for all of us, regardless of whether you were left standing or crumbling. So my hope would be that we are moving at a pace that's allowing us to get to a place where we feel confident that should something really catastrophic happen, it will be insurable to the extent that the market is left standing. There's systemic risk built into everything that we do. You can't get away from systemic risk and be a cyber insurer, but you can really manage that catastrophic risk. And that is something that I very much believe in.
We think we're getting a much better handle on it. Obviously, there's a huge amount of investment. Again, I'm sure James talks to some of these people. You know, when you think of, again, this is a new industry, the cyber modeling and cyber, you know, aggregation industry is another huge part of what's happening, and all that investment that's gone in certainly seems to be bearing fruit.
Yeah, absolutely. We're getting more and more and more data around it. Often it is said, though, that until we have that meaningful event, we won't entirely know. Right now, we're dealing with a lot of just trying to get it right via words on the paper. So the words on the policy that try to address this and whether or not they will be the right words should the time arise. I like to believe that we are getting there.
Well, I've taken up a lot of your time. You both got fantastic jobs, and you're both very, very kind of you to give up so much of your time to talk to me. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing this story develop, Ventures and QB Cyber. Really, really interesting the way you're working together. And of course, James, you're going to be working with all the other departments and all the other geographies of QB as well. So I'm sure your Air Miles account is fully topped up.
Yeah.
But thanks both of you for your time. I've really, really enjoyed talking to you. And we'll book in a date at some point in the future to speak again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, don't forget to subscribe or leave a like or a review or recommendation on whatever podcast platform you used to access this program. These really help get the word out. Before we go, just a quick reminder that advertising slots are available here and in other places in the Voice of Insurance podcasts. Podcasting is the fastest growing medium and attracts a high quality audience of key decision makers. It's also an intimate medium where you, the listener, are right in the room with me and the interview subjects. Needless to say, that means it's a great way of getting your message out directly to an audience because you know you've got their full attention. It's also very cost effective. So get in touch with Mark at thevoiceofinsurance.com to find out how you could be speaking directly to the industry. The Voice of Insurance is produced in association with Advantage Go. Release your underwriters to underwrite with Advantage Go's underwriting platform. Voice of Insurance is produced by me, Mark Gagan. Music was written by Anna Gagan and produced by Carlos Gagan. Check out more podcasts and written comment pieces at www.thevoiceofinsurance.com.